Welcome back as we continue our discussion of Sula by Toni Morrison.
Yeah, it is. There's just so much in this book. It's hard to talk about this book in an hour.
And I wonder if now would be, if it's all right, if this would be a good time to bring up our very specific selected passage.
Yes, I think it would be perfect.
You could find one?
Yeah, it was hard.
I think there's a passage in each one of the chapters.
There's a million of them. There's one on every page.
That'd be a hard task.
When we were picking passages, I think this one, we had a lot of passages from all the books, but this one was just, it was so hard because they're all so beautiful, you know, and no matter what struck you about this or that passage, the next passage one of us read, you know, when we were discussing them was like, well, that's really, you know, that's great too, you know, so, mm-hmm. But yeah, we do have a selected passage finally that we did pick. So yeah, let's get to that.
Did you want to read it, Alice?
Do you want me to read it?
I would love for you to read it.
Okay, I will read it.
What page are you on?
Oh, good. I have that written down somewhere. Hold on. In my book, it's page 123.
Okay.
But that's my book. I don't know if this is the copy that I have. Okay. You can see that, but okay. So, here is our selected passage. During lovemaking, she found and needed to find the cutting edge. When she left off cooperating with her body and began to assert herself in the act, particles of strength gathered in her like steel shavings drawn to a spacious magnetic center, forming a tight cluster that nothing, it seemed, could break. And there was utmost irony and outrage in lying under someone in a position of surrender, feeling her own abiding strength and limitless power. But the cluster did break, fall apart, and in her panic to hold it together, she leapt from the edge into soundlessness and went down howling in a stinging awareness of the endings of things, an eye of sorrow in the midst of all that hurricane rage of joy. There, in the center of that silence, was not eternity, but the death of time and a loneliness so profound the word itself had no meaning. For loneliness assumed the absence of other people, and the solitude she found in that desperate terrain had never admitted the possibility of other people. She wept then, tears for the deaths of the littlest things, the castaway shoes of children, broken stems of marsh grass battered and drowned by the sea, prom photographs of dead women she never knew, wedding rings in pawn shop windows, the tiny bodies of Cornish hens in a nest of rice.
Well read.
Well written, let's just say. Well written. I mean, when you have prose like that, you just don't want to screw up any one word, and I hope I didn't, but you know, it's just every word, every sound, you know, every utterance in Toni Morrison's writing is incredible. And I feel like we picked a really good passage that, you know, illustrates that. So
what I propose we spend a little bit of time doing is trying to track the journey that's happening in this selected passage.
Yes. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay.
I'm copying it.
I know. Would it? Go ahead.
Oh, would it be easier, Deborah, if we did a share screen so you don't have to find it in your book?
Oh, what? Well, I already got the book. I got the copy. I'm set.
Oh, you're ready. Okay,
wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this. There's so much imagery going on, and there's so much emotion. I hate to use the word emotion because I really want to say feeling, like as in sensory touch. You know, it's not just feeling like emotions you feel. This is physical. I mean, this is a passage about sex, you know, and how Sula feels when she's having sex. And yet, it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, don't you feel like that's...
It's her depths.
Yeah, it's just who she is in a way. It's her, I don't know, it's just Sula. What do you think, Sarah E?
I mean, she is not someone who is having sex as a way of bonding with other people.
Not
she
at is, all, yeah.
Right. She's instead, and I don't know whether enjoying is the right word, but she's enjoying the space, the separation between mm-hmm. people, and the irony, that she appreciates the irony, not only of that position of, yeah, you seem to be in a supine, you know, powerless position, but mm-hmm. you're not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a key line. Let me read that line again. And there was utmost irony and outrage in lying under someone in a position of surrender, feeling her own abiding strength and limitless power. I mean, that's Sula, right? She's the one with the power. She's the one who's strong in that sexual situation. And yet the irony and the outrage is that she's the one underneath. You know, she's lying under someone. And she doesn't, and that's when the cluster breaks, falls apart in her panic to hold it together. And then, so then she goes into her reaction to her, that to understanding that irony and outrage of positional physical self and the person within, the you know, the her spirit within. And it's just amazing, because she falls off an edge, right, into sound, stinging awareness, the soundlessness. She goes down howling into the stinging awareness of the endings of things, because that's what it feels like to her, right, when she confronts in the midst of having sex that outrage and that irony of her physical position as opposed to her inner self. She falls apart in a way, and I feel like the lines that have to do with loneliness mm-hmm. really sum her up.
Yes. You know,
there in the center of that mm-hmm. silence was not eternity, but the death of time, and a loneliness so profound the word itself had no meaning. For loneliness assumed the absence of other people, and the solitude she found in that desperate terrain had never admitted the possibility of other people. She doesn't even care or need that there's another person in the sexual situation. That's mm-hmm. not what's important to Sula, right? And yet, she has this profound sense of loneliness that goes beyond the lack of needing a bond through sex. I mean, it's just such a powerful description of this one woman's inner self, her depths, as you said, Deborah. You know, it's mm-hmm. And yet it does make her sad. She cries, you know, she weeps tears for the deaths of the littlest things, you know. It's just
And I think she weeps not just from sadness, but because she's moved. Yeah. So she is getting emotional satisfaction from it, but it's not the satisfaction of closeness, of no. happiness, of joy. No. It is the emotional satisfaction of a really powerful sorrow mm-hmm. and a really powerful aloneness.
Or a really powerful rage that she doesn't, that breaks her into pieces, falling down, howling. I mean, it's to me, it's a... I could argue, I feel like we could argue that she's weeping out of rage, not just sorrow and loneliness and that death of time and loneliness sounds sad, and outrage and howling sounds angry. So, you know, she could be weeping for both reasons. We don't know exactly, because this is such a well-written passage. You read it and it depends on you, the reader, what she's weeping for, mm-hmm. I feel like. And, mm-hmm. You know, and then especially because tears for the deaths of the littlest things, when you read that list, some of those things are very poignant. Some of them are a little violent, broken stems, battered, drowned, you know, photographs of women you don't know, that's just abstract. Wedding rings and pawn shop windows, that's divorce and disarray and usually, you know, sadness and anger. I mean, there's tiny bodies of Cornish hens in a nest of rice. The hens have been killed and cooked, you know. I mean, there's some violence in those. There's some poignancy in those, in that list. So she could be weeping for either through rage and violence and anger, or poignancy and sadness and loneliness, or all of it. I just love this passage. This is why we picked it. I get chills.
She's just so much more real. Mm-hmm. It's like she has been exposed, and I mean, there's nothing hidden, and she is so, she's a character that is, I mean, you know her north, east, south, and west. You know her up, down, in, and out, and you know this, the power of the sorrow is just like, oh my gosh, I would, you know, could I do that? I don't know, can I go that deep?
Yeah, and she is the title character, and
I'm
so
envious.
Yeah, we tend to focus on her, but I feel like Nell is equally given to us in this book. We access Nell equally, I feel like, to a certain degree. I mean, I feel like even though Sula is the title character, what do you guys think about that? Or does that even matter? I don't know.
No, I think that Sula enjoys being a mystery. Mm-hmm. And Nell would deny that she is a mystery, even though there are mysterious parts of herself.
Yeah.
So
I see them as a necessary yin-yang. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, you've got Nell and the conventional, the husband, the children, the homestead, the, she never left town, you know, you've got that world and all of its conventions and expectations. And then you have Sula, the woman of the world, who's, you know, just the opposite. So they have to be yin yang in order for them to have a united friendship, to, at least for me, I don't know. It's like if they're too much alike, then there's friction. But it's, you know, they started off together, they grew separately, and then they came together. And it seems like that coming together, that bond was a lot tighter.
Well, yeah. And when Sula first comes back to town, they do kind of reconcile after that 10 years apart. But it's brief because that's when Sula sleeps with Jude. And that breaks the friendship, really. I mean, you know, it just becomes very difficult for Nell to be friends with Sula. She just can't do it. She's too angry, too hurt. And yet, like you said, Sarah E., she just picks up and, you know, keeps going. She's a mother, and she's not like wallowing in bed with her, oh, he left me. It's not like that. She just, you know, keeps on keeping on. As a mother, she's a little bit overprotective of her, and that may not be the right word. She's what would you call it now? A helicopter mother is what, you know, she's a helicopter. But and while she's doing that, Sula's just getting more and more ostracized and hated by the town, especially after there's the rumor that goes around that she's sleeping with white men. That's when you're talking about outliers, and what does it take for some, you know, for a character, you know, somebody to cross a line. That's the line. And do we ever even know if it really happened? Did she really sleep with white men? I don't know if we ever really knew that, but that's the rumor, and the town just can't get past that with Sula. So she's persona non grata in this town, in the bottom. I think the only person who treats her nicely anymore is Shadrach.
Next up, we continue our discussion of Sula by Toni Morrison.